episode, I have filmmaker Alex Oshmansky. I was really excited to talk to Alex today about his new film, Career Opportunities in Organized Crime. This film is the very first feature-length film for virtual reality. And you don't have to have one of those nice fancy Oculus headsets or anything. You can watch it just at home on your cell phone. It was really fun talking to Alex about the filmmaking process for this. And not just that, but Alex actually has just an incredible story that we went into. Just a little bit about him. He graduated college at 18, earned a PhD in math from Oxford, has a med degree from Duke, residency at Harvard Med and Johns Hopkins. The guy's brilliant. It was just amazing to be able to talk with him and kind of learn, you know, about his story, about kind of growing up in school, really. I mean, he, like I said, graduated college at 18. I wasn't even thinking about graduating college at that point. I was just hoping to graduate high school. So, I mean, it was incredible to kind of hear his story, hear how the film came about, and, you know, a little bit about, you know, the process of being able to film, you know, one of these virtual reality films. You know, you're shooting 360 degrees. So, I mean, it's quite the task. You know, we've talked a little bit about what we saw during San Diego Comic-Con with the Mr. Robot VR experience. And, I mean, they talked some about that during the panel there with the cast. And, you know, I kind of bring that up with Alex in this episode. And it's just such an incredible thing, you know, what they're doing with these VR films. And like I said, this is the first ever feature-length film. It's a mockumentary that follows the filming of a recruitment for the Russian mafia. So it's you know, it's going to be a comedy that you're going to see here. Personally, I hope that somehow Donald Trump thinks this is real and starts saying, you know, that there's a recruitment video out there to join the Russian mafia. We've seen him say crazier things, so who knows? Maybe this will catch on, and you know, we'll see the presidential candidates getting roped into it. It'll be like an onion story coming to life. But I'm really excited to see this film. Career Opportunities in Organized Crime is released Wednesday, August 30th on realhouse.org on iOS, Android, and your desktop. Of course, you know, with this being a VR film, you know, watching it on your desktop, you're just going to lose, you know, everything that they worked so hard to make the experience. So, you know, put it on your phones, you know, check it out. You can get some of those cheap cardboard headsets. I know I have a few of them myself, and they work really, really well. Just don't watch them outside, because they will catch on fire through the lenses on the cardboard. I learned that the hard way at Petco Park here in San Diego Comic-Con. But yeah, check it out. You know, we'll have all the links up for that on the site. We'll also, as soon as they release that, I will post something on onthemicpodcast.com so that you can hop on and grab that and be able to watch the film on August 31st. And yeah, I hope you guys really enjoy this episode and listening to, you know, some of his story as well. Again, really, really fascinating to talk with Alex. Coming up in about 3 weeks here, I'll be at Salt Lake Comic Con September 1st through the 3rd at the Salt Palace here in Salt Lake City. I don't know my panel schedule just yet, but you know, I will be there. I'll also be bringing along with me, of course, Jesse Knight and Christopher James. We'll be recording a couple episodes of the podcast there on the convention floor, as well as doing a recap episode. The very night that we kind of wrap things up at Salt Lake Comic Con on September 3rd, we immediately head back to Los Angeles. We'll be in Los Angeles through the 8th. We'll be recording a bunch of episodes there. I think Christopher's going to be getting up and doing some stand-up. If my schedule permits, I'll try to hit up at least one room to try and get up and do some stand-up as well. But yeah, we're really excited to be heading back there. And of course, in October, I will be in New York City the 6th through the 10th, it looks like, for New York Comic Con, as well as, you know, we'll be recording a few episodes out there, as well as Portland, October 13th. So yeah, a lot of great stuff coming up. Stay tuned to onthemicpodcast.com. We'll have plenty more there. Of course, Jesse, as many of you have heard, Jesse has been writing for the site. A lot of cool stories that we've been able to put up on there and, you know, kind of keep a continual flow. Make sure you check that. Make sure you're following me on Twitter at Tim Drake, as well as on Instagram at TimDrake42. And yeah, follow the podcast as well on Twitter at OnTheMicPodcast. And make sure you're following Jesse as well, so you can see everything that he's writing at JPriceKnight. Yeah, you can check everything out there. All of those links are also available on the website, so make sure you check that out. Again, thank you to Alex for, you know, taking the time to sit down and kind of go through, you know, the whole story here. Again, I am really excited to see Career Opportunities in Organized Crime. It's going to be just a fantastic experience. So make sure you guys check this out. Enjoy this episode with Alex Oshmansky. We'll be right back. I'm doing well. I'm glad that we've got you on today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So I know we were trying to meet up while we were out at a San Diego Comic-Con, but just couldn't get our schedules all synced up.
It's a busy time.
So are you out in San Diego still today, then?
Yes, I am.
That's an absolutely beautiful area. Hopefully it's not as humid as it was while we were out there. That was a little unbearable for us.
Yeah, I know, and if that's the worst weather San Diego gets, it's brutal.
Yeah, it's so brutal. So I'm really excited to be talking to you about this film that you've created. But before we jump into talking about the film, I am absolutely fascinated by your entire story here. So as I had kind of read up a little about how this came about, just to kind of give our listeners a brief rundown here, you graduated college at the age of 18, and then went on to earn a PhD in math from Oxford, your medical degree from Duke, and then did your residency at Harvard Medical and Johns Hopkins, and now you're doing film.
That's about right.
So, I mean, how was that? To graduate college at such a young age and then to just kind of jump into really life at that point?
It's kind of hard for me to say just because, I don't have the basis of comparison of doing things the other way around. It was what it was. I really like learning and studying things. So, I thought getting into a math PhD and going to medical school was, that really made my day, so to speak. I get to study all sorts of cool things and learn about interesting scientific phenomena. It was a bit of a loss, in retrospect, because it's a lot of hard work that you start off with right off the bat at a very early age without getting to kind of, sit around and think about nothing for a while. I always loved films since I was very young, I have a bit of a lull now after completing all my medical training at long last, and kind of figured, if not now, then when? Took the leap and made a movie.
So then, even as you were growing up and kind of jumping into everything so young, was film always part of the plan then?
It was always sort of a plan in the background, if I did it differently. I had applied to the University of Southern California for film school after finishing college. I got in, actually, back then, but decided to go the medical route, which I don't regret at all. I love the practice of medicine, and it's very fulfilling. It's sort of always in the back of my mind has been, what if I did it differently? So I guess this is one way of kind of exploring the life not lived.
Yeah. how did, your peers and everybody around you at that time when you, first were graduating and going through your PhD, I mean, how did everybody react kind of to the fact that you were so young and in some of the programs that people, 10 years older than you were in?
People were generally pretty cool about it. I've always looked, I think, a little older than I actually am. I've always had like a pretty robust beard even before it was the cool hipster thing to do. I think I always looked kind of like 5-6 years older than I was. And when people did find out I was pretty young, they didn't really make that big a deal of it. They were just kind of like, oh, really? Kind of surprised and then moved on. One of those things that's kind of odd for like a week or so, and then when you're studying, it doesn't really matter anymore.
So, I mean, coming from me having the regular high school experience and all of that, I mean, at the same time, it was like, I wouldn't say you missed out on anything doing that. I mean, it's quite the amazing feat that you were able to do. I mean, by the time I was 18, I was just excited that another American Pie movie was coming out, and that was the highlight of my summer. So,
I actually did get to experience most of high school. I kind of did it simultaneously with college. you know, I think more I kind of missed out on, you know, the 4 years of college, so to speak. But you know, I actually didn't mind high school at all. Maybe it was just because I didn't have to spend much time there.
Yeah. So now, I mean, as far as kind of missing out on those 4 years of college, I mean, so were you doing a lot of your college studies then kind of through the high school, or were you, I mean, still on campus and it was just kind of the age thing that made you miss out on it?
You know, so basically, where I grew up, in Littleton, Colorado, the local school district had this very cool program at the time that I don't think they anticipated anybody like myself using quite that way, that if you finished the regular high school curriculum before you were done with high school, they would actually pay for you to take the next logical course at the local University of Colorado branch at a vastly discounted rate. So they would pay like, you know, $200 or whatever to have me take that course. And, you know, I finished sort of high school math at the age of like 13, 14 or so. So essentially I was like, well, if I can get them to pay for most of college while I'm here at the high school, I'm going to do that. So I was actually at the high school most of the time, taking sort of correspondence courses through the local University of Colorado branch, so UC Denver or UC Colorado Springs. So I didn't actually spend much time physically on the college campus at all. I was mostly just in high school, kind of reading books.
Yeah, I've always been jealous of everybody that kind of got that. A lot of those kind of concurrent classes and stuff were just barely starting as I was getting into like my junior year of high school. So I got a couple of classes out of the way. And now it's like I see all these kids around me that are graduating with their associates already or all or close to their close to their bachelor's, and I'm just like, yeah, that would have been nice.
Yeah, and mostly it was just dumb luck going to that particular school district that didn't think that through. So
did you graduate then from the University of Colorado?
I did. I graduated from the University of Colorado at Boulder.
Okay, that's like my brother actually just started dental school out there last week.
Oh, awesome.
So yeah, he's absolutely loving it out there so far.
Yeah, another just like location which is terrible, just like San Diego. Like it's brutal in Boulder.
So now, who as you had that film love and that film background a little bit, who were some of your influences growing up? Was that as you kind of kept that love for film growing?
Well, you know, sort of the modern directors that have sort of built on the previous ones, you know, are the ones you always grow up with when you're a kid. You know, Nolan now is, you know, absolutely incredible. But, you know, after you get exposed to the initial, you know, sort of peer group films, as you're growing up, you know, you always go back, you start exploring more and you go back to like the French New Wave directors and sort of the American progressive directors of the 1970s, 1980s. And, you know, everything from Truffaut onward all the way back to like the, you know, German expressionists, you know, it essentially just dove into all of it and tried to get as much as I could. And, you know, kind of with the film I was doing now, like I was, I think, actually trying to mimic in some way the very early film experiments of like the 1910s, 1920s, of people just sort of playing around with cameras for the first time to see what they could do. Because it's very kind of like that now with VR film.
Yeah.
At South by Southwest while I was there, J.J. Abrams was giving a talk on something. And someone asked him, have you thought about doing any VR film at all? And I think he gave a very, like, insightful answer, which was basically, you know, I don't really want to get into it because the sort of vocabulary of VR film really isn't there yet. So, you know, sort of in regular film, as you're learning it, there are these books of sort of the vocabulary of filmmaking. You know, like, okay, a medium shot, you know, Hitchcock discovered that far away, that starting with a very good, you know, a close-up and then expanding has this effect on the audience versus, you know, a medium shot followed by this shot has sort of this psychological effect on the audience. You know, those books of sort of what the shots do emotionally, that sort of vocabulary of film really isn't there at all for VR film. So everyone kind of playing around in the field right now is just doing things and seeing what happens, which makes it a lot of fun to try to play with and just see what happens.
So when it came down to kind of creating the project, how was it then? I mean, where it was, you know, groundbreaking, nobody, you know, I mean, this is the first VR feature-length film. How was it that you guys kind of approached it looking at, you know, we don't have just the basic, you know, single camera, we do it this way, you know, we're shooting 360 degrees. What was the way that you guys kind of approached it in that manner?
Well, you know, there are several very, very good filmmakers now that are working with 360 VR and were before we started. So I had the benefit of, you know, sort of what they had done already. Pierre and Felix working out of Quebec. So we had some background of, you know, what had already been done. But a lot of it was just kind of intuitive guessing. And, you know, we're like, okay, you know, the kind of way that I sort of think about it is if I was physically there in the scene, in the room with the actors or with the characters, rather, how would I want to experience that scene? Then we put the camera there. And, you know, it's actually come a lot even since the field has come along a lot, even in the year since we shot the film. We shot it almost 1 year ago to the day. And, you know, the question of, like, how often do you cut in VR film? So the average modern film, there's a cut every 3 seconds. That would just look, would that work at all in VR film? You know, standard thinking is that you should do longer takes, and we did that in our film. The average take was, I think, like 5 or 7 minutes in our film. So in some sense, you evoke a lot of theater and plays with that. Could the audience handle, you know, a quick jarring cut in virtual reality? So we played with that in a couple of scenes to see what would happen, and, you know, just kind of experimented. And all of a sudden, like, the term experimental film really, really fits this kind of project well, because it really is an experiment, and how can you get this sort of version of filmmaking to work?
Right, and I know while we were at a San Diego Comic-Con, the people behind Mr. Robot actually released their special VR short that they did there, which was only, I want to say it was 5 minutes long. And even that was just mind-blowing. And I know Rami Malek kind of talked afterwards about his long days, because they were doing just those long, continuous takes, because they ran into the same thing of, well, where do we cut? It's not just the normal, you know, oh, we get the, you know, the mid shot here, we get the close up here, we just quickly cut. It is, you know, making sure that it is continual, that you see those flows. And I mean, I can't even fathom having to sit down and really figure that out, especially looking at some of those movements. There's a scene in the Mr. Robot one where they portray him getting high, and the camera kind of moves up while you're still getting that 360 degree look. And that absolutely tripped me out watching it through the headset they gave us. I mean, how did you guys approach some of those, even when it was like a crane shot? I mean, were those type of things, you know, harder to do, or once you kind of got the recipe figured out, I mean, did it all just kind of fall into place at that point?
And, you know, especially like what the studios are doing, where they have these sort of tie-in VR experiences to their films, like the Mr. Robot thing, in some ways are even much, much harder than what we're doing or what we did, because kind of one of the, like, how should I put it, sort of story things in our movie that gave us a lot of leeway was the movie is a movie within a movie. It's a mockumentary, so essentially these Russian mobsters are filming a recruitment film to try to get more people to join the Russian mafia. And what that allows us is, you know, okay, so they're filming a movie while the movie's being made. So if there's some, you know, movie-making equipment in the shot, okay, that kind of makes sense.
Right.
So if there's lighting equipment, or if there's a, you know, if there's a guy walking around with a boom mic, okay, that makes sense. But when you're doing things like the Mr. Robot VR production, it doesn't make any sense at all for there to be a boom mic just hanging.
you just have all these grips just hanging out in one of the corners.
They're like, oh, and we just said, oh, and we had our acting convention at the Soundbite convention.
So, I mean, as far as developing this story, as you explained, it's a mockumentary that follows the filmmaking of a recruitment video for the Russian mafia. How did you kind of come up with the story for this? Was this already kind of an interest for you?
My family's from the former Soviet Union, and I can't remember where I saw it, but in 1990s era Russia, there were actually mafia recruitment videos. And I just thought as a kid that was the funniest thing in the world, like that, you know, the Corleone family would come and show you a video and say, hey, what do you think? So I had that in the back of my mind for years as something that I thought would be a funny movie. And especially in the past 10, 15 years when mockumentary, I guess it goes all the way back to Spinal Tap, but especially in the past 15 years where, the mockumentary has become really an established trope of filmmaking. I just thought it would be fun. And at the same time, it allowed for the VR filmmaking. I'm kind of a technology guy. I like toys, to play around with. And I thought, oh, this premise would allow the VR filmmaking without a lot of the VFX necessary to remove things from the shot that you would ever otherwise have to, spend a lot of time figuring out. I figured it would be a good fit.
So, I mean, you mentioned kind of being, a tech guy and liking the toys. I mean, do you see VR continually growing to become, just a bigger format of how we're going to start viewing films?
I don't think it will, I think it'll be a niche onto itself as it grows. Like, I think it'll become mainstream eventually, but I don't think it'll either supplant or overtake conventional film in any way. Much like conventional film will never supplant the theater or vice versa. It kind of becomes really unique from, like, say, 3D film, right? When you go to the movies and you wear those glasses, that really doesn't fundamentally alter the experience of the movie. VR kind of does, because, suddenly the director can't tell you where to look. Which changes the whole dynamic of the audience to the film and sort of the filmmaker's intent. So I think that way it'll become kind of its own thing. And I think people who haven't been exposed to the conventions of filmmaking for as long, basically young people, teenagers, will be the first ones to sort of carry it forward, moving on. In the film festivals where we've shown the film so far, the people who have by far expressed the most enjoyment at it have been teenagers and young people, just like, this is amazing. So I think it will eventually, it'll keep growing. People will develop this vocabulary of VR filmmaking, and it will just keep expanding and growing until it does become, I hate to say standardized like movies, but that there is a traditional way of making movies that people periodically disrupt. And I think that pattern of sort of artistic growth will happen in VR just as it did in conventional film.
So I'm really excited to see the film. I mean, the second that I heard about it, I was just like, yes, I have to learn more about this. I mean, it's such an incredible concept, and I love the fact that it's a mockumentary. So I any type of satire and mockumentary style is one of my absolute favorites. Now, Career Opportunities in Organized Crime, it is released August 31st on realhouse.org, as well as iOS, Android, and people can watch it on their desktop. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. It loses something if you just kind of watch it on your desktop.
Yeah.
This sounds bizarre. I know the thing in filmmaking is to, watch the Quentin Tarantino 70mm cut in a conventional film, not digital film, in a large, well projected theater. But actually, probably the best way to view this film is on your cell phone. So there's, you know, these essentially VR cardboard, quote-unquote, headsets that you can get for about $5. And they allow you to essentially turn your phone into a VR headset. And that's, you know, avoiding the expense of a dedicated, like, $1,000 VR Oculus or HTC Vive type headset is probably the best way to experience the film.
Yeah, and the cardboard ones do work fantastic. I actually have a couple of them myself. The one thing I can say to anybody listening, though, is just be careful using them outside. They will catch on fire. So I learned that the hard way.
Yeah, that is one of the things that we're running up against is these first-generation VR headsets. I don't understand why, because you know, video game players obviously are going to play these games for hours. They didn't really take heat sinks into account as well as they might have. I guess the cell phone manufacturers just never saw that coming. So they do tend to overheat. So we are also going to release the movie in 10-minute chunks. that you presumably more safe.
Yeah. So, Alex, it's been wonderful talking to you. I really, again, look forward to seeing this, and it's just been so fascinating learning a little bit more about your story here. Where can anybody find you if they kind of want to follow you on social media? Are you on social media?
Oh, man, I'm an old man now. I am on social media. I have a Twitter account, which I should probably use more. I'm at Alex Osh, A-L-E-X-O-S-H, and also on Facebook and LinkedIn and those various accounts. If you just sort of Google my name through those. Otherwise the account for the movie itself is at Mafia Careers. Stay tuned.
Excellent.
And Tim, thanks so much for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. So and hopefully one of the times when we're back in San Diego, we'll be able to connect with you after the films come out and actually talk a little bit in person about it.
Perfect.
Awesome.
Right, well, thanks again, Chip.
You bet. Thank you, Alex. Have a great rest of your day.
You too. Talk soon.